Hey, thanks again for pressing play and welcome once again to another edition of the Suns Jam Session Podcast, the original post-game podcast right here on Planet Orange. Obviously, it's the off-season, so there's no post-game to talk about, but we have been shooting the shit about the Phoenix Suns since 2019, and we're happy you're here for this one. Even though it might be the off-season, there is still plenty to talk about as it pertains to the Phoenix Suns. There's the Bronny rumors. Who are we going to take at the 22nd overall pick? Trades galore. I don't know where to start. So I got a special guest with us tonight who's going to talk about all these different things and more. Matthew can't make it tonight. Got a little migraine going on, but that's okay, Jamsters. I'll be drinking for two. So make sure you subscribe, rate, give us a little review. A thumbs up always helps, but crack them if you got them. It's time to start jamming. Now, you know, Jamsters, that every player who comes on the show has their own drop. And with the voice of the Phoenix Suns, John Bloom, introducing them, let's give it up for Cedric Ceballos, ladies and gentlemen.
At 6'7", from Cal State Fullerton, Cedric Ceballos.
Wow. Cal State Fullerton. And look at you, rocking the Cal State Fullerton gear tonight.
Trying to help the baseball team out.
Hey, man. So you grew up in Southern California, right?
Yeah. L.A. guy, born and raised. So I'm used to the great weather.
So are you out there now, or are you hanging out with us in Phoenix where it's 100 and hell?
Yeah, I'm in Phoenix right now. I just hang around for maybe about two more days. When I only leave when it get past 110, 112, that area. Other than that, I'm good.
See, I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. So it's kind of like being out here, you know, when we moved back out here like 95 or 94, right. It was 106 every day. I was like, oh yeah, this is like a normal day in the Valley. But Cal State Fullerton, I grew up loving them. Obviously the baseball team has always been something that is above average, if you will. But welcome to the Suns Jam Session. It's awesome to have you on, Cedric. Or should I call you Ced, or the Hocus Pocus Man, the Garbage Man? What should I call you?
Anything but Ceddy. You can call me anything else but that, man. That's a character on television, and people always run up to me with that. I'm like, who are they talking about?
Ceddy, get out of here with that shit.
That's right.
So I just, to lead off the podcast, I got a question. NBA Finals, this playoffs overall, what are your thoughts on this? Is this an entertaining playoffs? What are your thoughts on the finals? How are you taking this all in?
Well, a lot of storylines, JV, to be honest. You know, obviously, let's start at the top. Jason Tatum, you know, has known to disappear in big situations. Has he really shown up as everybody wanted him to? And probably how he wanted him to? I don't think so, but they are up 2-0. And the most important thing out there is, not their field goal percentage, because they shot terrible from the three their last game in game two. But I think the fact that they're active, the aggressiveness. Sometimes if you're aggressive, you know, Michael Jordan, against us in the finals in 93, he shot the ball almost 50 times, you know, to get 45, something like that. But it was aggressive. You have to continue to be aggressive when you're the top one, two, three players on your team. If you stay aggressive, then it doesn't matter if your shot is falling or not. Great Reggie Miller always says, I'm going out with guns blazing. So if I'm going 2 for 7,200, then you went out for 70, you know, you just missed 7,200 shots. It just is what it is.
Yeah, I've always liked to say it's when you impose your will, right? Yeah. You're the one who's dictating pace. You're the imposition of will. And it's almost a great segue, because it kind of takes us to this Phoenix Suns team, the 2023-2024 Suns. And I felt like there was a lot of issues with that imposition of will. You have all these amazingly talented players. You got Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal. And they can all score at a high clip, but none of them truly had that possession of will on a continual basis. It was almost kind of a it's your turn, my turn type of basketball team. And when you see something like that, as you're watching, and obviously you've played the game, you're seeing things like that, you know, is this something that is that starts in the locker room and it manifests itself on the court? Is it a lack of daisicalness? Like, how did you absorb what this season was? and how it ultimately played out for the Suns.
Well, I'm kind of going to go against the grain, and people can, you know, jump on me, or you see my at right there. Go ahead and hit me up if you want to hit me on social media. But there's no controversy with the Suns. There's no animosity between players on the Suns. They're all nice guys. I'm going back to 93 because that was, you know, when we went to the finals, arguably one of the best Suns teams ever. There's tension between Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley. There's tension between Kevin Johnson and Tom Chambers on who's going to be the star, this, that, and other. It never got to a point where it's disrupted the team, but the fact of the matter is when Kevin had the opportunity to be KJ, he was KJ. When Charles had an opportunity to be Charles, Tom, same thing. They did what they're supposed to do, and you can even add Marley to the case. Myself and Richard Dumas, on the break, you know, if we didn't get the ball on the break, that's what we do. We finish. We finishers. Kevin, you can start all you want. Danny Ainge, you can start the play all you want. But when that ball comes on the break and offensive rebounds and tip-ins and garbage points, you know, that's what I do. And, I, you know, nobody on this current Suns team really takes that personal, that Devin is shining. And Kevin is shining. And Bill is shining. They're just really nice guys. And I know it's like I said, it's trying to stir something up. No. You look back at it, you know, the Michael Jordan's mad at Scottie Pippen. Are you going to be strong enough? Dennis Rodman mad at Scottie Pippen. Are you going to pull a headache on us? Kobe, Shaq. You know, I can go on and on of guys that just did not get along and won championships. You know, it's just the way it is. It doesn't mean you have to disrupt your team. Even go to the Golden State era. Two of them with Kevin, you know, him and Draymond. Yeah. Not get along, but they went to the finals 3 years straight. So it's like that sometimes. You just don't everybody wants to be stars, and you have to be a star to win a championship. You got to go out there and be aggressive and be a star. As I say with Jason Tatum, his field goal percentage may not show that right now, but he's still being aggressive, he's still attacking, he's still putting his teammates in a position to win basketball games.
Yeah, it's funny how people just ride Tatum because he's not putting up 40 a night and doing so on a 70% field goal percentage. It's almost comical because I think that a lot of teams would line up to have that type of player in what he is. Because like last night, for example, the shot wasn't there. He's missing some layups, but he was taking advantage of what he saw relative to the Mavericks defense and was dishing out assists and put his team in a position to win. And that's ultimately at the end of the day what you want. And I feel some of that with Kevin Durant here on the Suns. Is everybody feels like Kevin Durant, at least from the fan base, because one thing that we do said is after every game, we go live right here on the Jam Session podcast. So sometimes I'm in the arena doing it up on where they put the Bright Side of the Sun people, you know, kind of up in the corner, which is a great, great seats. But you'll sit there and you'll see the chat go off and people will get so frustrated because Kevin didn't go for 40. You know, he only had 23, but it was an efficient 23, but he didn't do enough. What's wrong with these people? Like, as long as we win, but I guess the whole frustration is we didn't win a lot this year either.
Yeah, and he has to be aggressive. I mean, two-time champion. He's an MVP. Beal hasn't been close to that. Devin Booker hasn't been close to that. He's been to the finals, obviously, but he's an MVP of the league for a reason. He's a finals MVP for a reason. He's got two championships for a reason. And on those championship teams, he was the aggressor. He was aggressive. Steph Curry was unbelievable. Don't get me wrong, but Kevin Durant was that guy on that team, regardless that they had already won championships and he came over there to just add to their greatness. That's wonderful. But he was aggressive on that team. I can go back to Showtime days with Bob McAdoo, came in as an MVP scoring champ. But when he came off that bench, his mentality was, this is my squad and I'm the leading scorer of these five right here. And I'm gonna try to add what I can do in that score. He has to be aggressive. And we haven't talked about Dallas yet because we talked about the finals, but, you know, look at Kyrie and Luka. You don't think there's a little bit there, not to disrupt the team, but Kyrie wants that ball all the time.
Yeah,
Luka wants that ball all the time. They can't have it like that. Obviously, Kyrie has to take a step back because of where his career has gone. He's coming into a Luka Doncic team. A team that's been built around Luka, so he has to take that step back. Doesn't mean he wants to take that step back. You know, Jerry West said it best. Everybody's talking about, I want a dog. No, I don't want a dog. I want a wolf. You know, I want a wolf. And those two guys want to be wolves, but they just have to understand on how they're going to, you know, survive being two wolves trying to conquer in the wild, wild west.
Well, I think it's tough, though, because the defense that they're playing is really, really good. With Drew Holiday and Derek White at point of attack defenders, that's a tough recipe for anybody to try to navigate. And what they're doing is what I think is what you should do if you want to beat Dallas, and that is try to take Kyrie Irving out of it. You know, you go for the smallest guy. He might have some of the best handles this league has ever seen, but if he's constantly being pestered every time he has the ball, it's going to result in some negative possessions, and that's ultimately what's happening. You couple that with their ability to shoot the three ball, and they had an off shooting night last night, and they still somehow overcame Dallas and on an off night. So it's tough for Dallas. Do you see Dallas having any opportunity to come back and win this series? I mean, I know we played in Dallas, 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. So is that who you're going for in this one? Your heart's with the Mavs on this one?
It's all over the place. It's with the Mavs, and it's a little bit, as I grew up as a kid, a Laker, because I don't want them to catch L.A. as far as the banners. Yep. I think Jason has deserved it. And let's jump back into Dallas. I think the defense is ugly from the Celtics, and that's what you want. You could tell the two types of defense on one end and the other between Dallas's defense and the Celtics defense. They don't really care. You know, that first pressure of Luka, the double team, is not going to make the great defensive play. It's going to be somebody on the other side that's going to get a deflection or a steal or a block shot. And they don't really care. And that's the wonderful mixture of a championship team. But on the other hand, and then they also, let's get back to Boston. They also are on each other. They hold each other responsible on getting in the right place at the right time. When they do make mistakes on assignments during that timeout or that free throw or the ball out of bounds, they're pointing like, hey, you got to get there. On the other side with the Mavericks, that's not there. Luka Doncic is not being held accountable. He has unbelievable ability. They're saying he was hurt yesterday, which he always says when it's a tough game. He always pulls an injury, and I don't think it's injuries, to be honest with you. I think he's just out of shape. Joker did the same thing once he came back in shape. You got to understand, if you're going to hold that ball 90% of the game, you got to condition yourself to hold that ball 190% of the game. And I think that's what happens. But if he can move like that, make those moves, cut, turn, twist, all that on offense, he can do it on the defensive end. It's just, you know, it's ole, 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 ole. And they attack, and Boston is attacking him. And nobody, because he's the man on that team and the way they built this team around him. And even when I was there, you know, it was a frustrating thing that Coach Carlisle had, that he couldn't get on Luka. He couldn't get on Luka because Luka, obviously, he has brought that franchise to a wonderful eruption after the exits of the legend Dirk Nowitzki. But nobody is holding Luka accountable. He's not coming over in the timeout huddles, and Kyrie's not, you know, talking to him like he talked to LeBron, like, you got to get over there. Kristen Thompson, you know, those guys talk to LeBron, even though they the man, hey, you got to get your butt over here. And nobody's telling him that. Jason Kidd is not telling him that because of his personality. Who knows? He may or may not can take that. You know, being at a young age, starting a 13, 14-year-old pro, and nobody's, you know, really come to him and say, hey, this is how you got to play. This is what you have to do, crack back. But you see the frustration. But they built the team around it. They put the Klebas and everybody else around him to be a dog, so to speak, on defense after they go around him. So I just think there's two different styles of defensive presence from the Celtics in Boston, and that's been shown in game one and game two.
Yeah, and throughout the entire season. You know, I mean, that's one thing. And even this playoff run, you know, entering this finals, they were, 12-2, and everybody's like, well, they got such an easy run to the finals. We don't really know who they are. It's like, you know what? They TCO'd, right? They took care of business against what was in front of them. And that's all you can do. And with Kristaps Porzingis going down as well, you know, two games into the playoffs, or I think it was the Heat series, you know, he didn't play for 39 days and he came out and he was fine to start game one. It's frustrating to watch, to see Dallas in the position they are, obviously, as a Suns fan, for multiple reasons. Right. One, there's the Ayton and Luka. You go back to the 2018 draft and, you know, a lot of people were on the Luka train. A lot of people were on the Ayton train. And now the circling of the wagons have begun. The people who, you know, well, I told you Luka, and I'm one of them. I was pro Luka at the time. We had Igor Kokoshkov as the coach. I'm like, hey, you know this guy. Obviously, we went in a different route as an organization. That's just kind of the way it goes. But I think it's an interesting point that you bring up about how, again, since this kid's been 14, he's been the best player on the court. And so there's a certain level of ego that he carries himself with, and there's nothing wrong with that. You should have ego. You should have drive. You should have that competitiveness. But you should also be held accountable and have the ability to hold those around you accountable. And that is what Boston is. Drew Holiday is obviously a bane of the Suns' existence because of what occurred in 2021 and how he shut us down in the finals, shut Devin Booker down in the biggest moments of the biggest games. And you see him out there doing it again in the first two games of the finals, holding his team accountable, hooting, hollering, and yelling at his team, getting in those huddles and making himself vocal and known and saying, hey, you know, we're not done. And we won't be done, and he won't be satisfied until, you know, it's all over. And you take a look at Dallas, and they are a team of misfit toys, if you will. A great job by their organization at the trade deadline to get Gafford, right? To get PJ Washington, to get these guys who ultimately turn out to be great additions for him because it got him to this point. I don't think it's going to be able to take him over the top. I mean, I originally said Celtics in six, and even that, I'm like, eh. Now, granted, they're going back to Dallas. You know, like, how important is home court advantage in the postseason? That feeling off the energy. Obviously, you know, that 93 team, you're part of the Suns' second team unit that's coming in there. You guys thrive when you get an opportunity to do that, but you lost the first two games at home, right? So.
Yeah, it's let's back up a little bit if I can. I wanted to get something in with the draft.
And please. I know you're
a pro Luka guy, and you wanted Luka.
No, I'm not. I wanted Luka. I'm not a pro Luka guy now. I watched him play for 5 years, and it annoys the crap out of me.
See, that exactly what my point I was going to make, Davey, because you know, Aiden played for the U of A. He played high school in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. It was the perfect scenario to go along with a wonderful Devin Booker. You know, to go along with a wonderful Devin Booker. Now, if you bring Luka Doncic as the first pick in with a Devin Booker, does that destroy Devin Booker? Now, you got a guy that's dominating the basketball. Now, you got a guy that's the number one pick, more statue. May want more attention, may want more prowess. Then you go to Atlanta, you know, with the Trae Young thing.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Let's go. Was that Sacramento?
You know, Marvin Bagley.
Yeah. Which would have been a great pick for Phoenix too. Local guy, grew up here as a kid. Mm-hmm. His grandfather, wonderful ASU alumni supporter, and as well as a great pro. That would have been a great story, too, and also a counterpart with the wing. But you had wonderful wings at that time to go along with Devin Booker. Then you go Atlanta. If Luka Doncic goes to Atlanta and that team is not built around him, it doesn't work. Guys are jealous. He's not that good. Why are they giving him the throne? You know, Atlanta's a different beast. That was a perfect scenario for Trae to go to Atlanta. Trae could handle it. You know, the egoness, he can handle the haters. And I just think the way that Dallas has handled Luka Doncic coming in is just great. And, unfortunately, you know, him and Carlisle could not get everything right. And they didn't have a lot of beef, don't get me wrong. He just needed somebody that I think Luka could trust. And I think he does that in Jason. Nico did a great job by bringing these picks in. These guys, you know, it's, you know, Charles said something on the air the other day, like most of the time, when guys are on terrible teams, they're on terrible teams and they're shooting the ball a lot and their average is real high. And then when they get on a good team, you know, they kind of, you know, they get lost. Well, what happened to that guy? Well, he's not getting 50 shots a game. So obviously he can't do what he does. But I think these guys were just on bad teams. They had the ball a little bit too much in their hands and they needed a team like Dallas with Luka and Kyrie having it in their hands all the time. And they can just finish. I was a finisher. There wasn't one play for me my whole career where I got the ball and everybody cleared out and I just went ISO. If I dribbled the ball more than two times, it was time to arrest me. I didn't need more than two dribbles. So that, you know, those things mesh up. Now you can leave a Phoenix Sun team, like which I did, and become an all-star with the Lakers without having the basketball too. A lot of players do that. Luol Deng, you know, a lot of players do that. But I think the way Nico has structured this team, it's just great. But I also think that if Kyrie doesn't show up, we gonna need somebody else to be a playmaker, and for them to win this series. Somebody else besides Luka is gonna have to be a playmaker, because the double teams are coming for those two so aggressively that when they kick it to somebody else, and they may have to bring one of the young guys off the bench to do so. They need to create when they're going, you know, 3-on-2 or having numbers that way, 4-on-3, because two people are double teaming Luka or Kyrie.
Yeah, I think the Celtics are too deep. They're too talented. They're too deep. They've played together, you know, with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They've played together for years and years and years, you know. And you know, I'll bring it back to the Suns, and we're in such a unique spot as an organization, right? You go and you look. This is the first non-organic big three that we've ever possessed on this team. Right, like in the past, we've had Steve Nash, who was drafted here, and Amari, and the Matrix, and you know, going back to the '93 team, you know, it was KJ who was kind of you know, the homegrown guy, but he wasn't even from here originally. But Chambers, you know, at the back end of his prime, but you know, Sir Charles and everybody else who was on that team. God, that was a fun team, and thank you for being part of that, by the way.
Only homegrown guys were Marley. You know, Marley was drafted, obviously booed out to the gym. When he was drafted, I was drafted here.
Yeah.
Chambers, you know, obviously he started off the whole free agency thing. KJ came over from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and obviously Barkley from Philadelphia. But it's like funny, at the end of this season, do they blow it up? I said it. Do the Suns blow it up? That was a question everybody had. Do they blow it up?
Yeah.
If they do blow it up, they do not let Devin Booker go. Yeah. I mean, they designed a uniform after his lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? They got a lowrider Suns uniform after his lifestyle. So if they blow anything up, it's not going to be Devin Booker.
No, and I don't think that they blow it up surely because this concept was a two-year window to begin with. They weren't going to go win a championship this year. We wanted them to. We believed they could. But we didn't know until we saw it on the court. And all the free agency acquisitions we made last offseason that we thought were steals, right? Kata Bate Diop and Yudam Watanabe and bring it back Josh Okogie. We thought that these veteran minimum guys who were on prove it deals, these are young guys, young athletic wings who've had some success where they've been, but they wanted to get an opportunity to be on a big stage as a part of a big machine that could potentially make a deep run in the playoffs, ultimately didn't work out. And part of that is because, in my opinion, just watching them night in and night out, is they were too afraid of the moment. When Kata Bates Diop is out there and he has an opportunity to take a three and he looks over to the right and there's Kevin Durant, he doesn't take that three. He's dishing it to Kevin. They were so worried on not making the wrong decision that they never tried to make the right decision. They didn't want to get penalized for doing the wrong thing. And ultimately, the Suns and James Jones did what I think was the right move. Stack those contracts in the last year you could stack those contracts. Bring in Royce O'Neal, who has that defensive presence and can shoot the three ball, a true 3-and-D guy. And now you're kind of hitting reset going into this year because now you know what works around this big three. So people are saying blow it up, and people are frustrated, and I get that. And I can empathize with Suns fans because we're Suns fans, right? Like, we've been through 56 years, or in my case, 41 years of just always this close, always this close, but never, you know, smoking the cigar at the end of the night, never, you know, just chugging a bottle of champagne with pure and utter bliss. We've never been there. So every time something goes wrong, it's the, oh, here we go again, and let's sit there and we all become armchair GMs and try to fix it. So you take a look at it. What do you think the Suns should do from a roster construction standpoint this offseason, given the second apron tax restrictions and everything that they have to face? It sounds like you're not a fan of blowing it up. What should they do? What should they add? What should they subtract?
I just think they changed the tempo around these three individuals.
Like it.
You know, let this open it up. You know, if you're going to have them ISO the whole time, just open it up. I want to see Kevin smile. I haven't seen him smile since he's been here. And I haven't seen not only the smile, I haven't seen that snarl, that look that he's like, I'm about to show you why I'm the easy money sniper. You know, I haven't seen that. And I don't know if he's happy. I'm not in his head. Every time I see him, he greets me with smiles and hugs and everything, high fives and whatever. But you can't really tell when he's, you know, greeting one of the OGs, but on what's going on. I'm a big fan. The wonderful thing when I was playing and knowing my role, I would see Van Arsdale in the locker room. I would see, you know, I would see all kind of old school guys, Walter Davis, when he was with Denver on broadcasting, obviously, when he come, and they would give little tidbits on what you could do. And it helped me and Richard out. It helped me and Miguel out. It helped me and Oliver Miller out. When you see Alvin Adams putting this, you know, hey, this is what you do. You know, obviously being coached by Westfall and Cotton and Lionel Hollins, those guys. But the guys who really understand how to be a Phoenix Sun, how to represent the Valley, how to love and passion, they were always around. They were always around to give their, you know, Neil Walk, rest in peace, he always came to practice when he had an opportunity, wheelchair and all, and grab, you know, me and the young guys and say, hey, he had these big mitts and, hey, this is what you're supposed to do. He had the deep voice and make sure you do this and this, that, and the other. And I think that helps, you know, having that tradition. I mean, a lot of people have gotten away from that. A lot of teams have gotten away from that. I'm not really sure why. You know, it's a lot of sneakiness in the game now. You know, you and Terry Porter got here, which I think was the shortest tender of a coach of the Suns. You know, he didn't want any of the veterans in the locker room. Like, we're not out for
why?
You're going to lose it on your own. Don't worry about it. We're not looking for it. I'm not looking to be, you know, it's the wonderful thing, like, when I was announcing, but, you know, it would be times I would talk to Amari. It'll be times that I would talk to Sean Marion. It'll be times I talk to the guys that are not playing, because I've been in every role. I've been in every role. I'm about to be cut. I'm the last guy on the bench, and I've gotten MVP votes. So I've been in every spectrum that you can have, and that can help when you're trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, and you know, especially now with social media, because people always poking at you. And got opinions and all this, and you don't know the right thing. Should we slow it down? Should we pick it up? This, that, and the other. And if you ask somebody that went through it before, you know, what are these things? You know, that's the wonderful thing. You know, that's the wonderful thing about that team I came back to with Jason Kidd, Kevin Johnson, and Steve Nash. You know, these three guys were absorbing KJ, you know. And then Nash absorbed Jason Kidd, and these guys would just converse like these are two great point guards. You know, KJ haven't been inducted to the Hall of Fame yet, but, you know, that's almost three Hall of Fame point guards right there playing on the same team and just learning from each other and at different stages of their lives. Obviously, Kevin on his way out, Jason Kidd dominant now, Steve Nash rookie trying to grow. And I think that just helps. So, you know, no, I'm not a fan of blowing this up. I think they're very talented. I think, as Shaq calls the others, I think they just need to understand their role. A lot of the others, and I'm saying it real whispery, like, they want to be in those other three spots. I never wanted to be Marley. I never wanted to be KJ, Tom, or Charles. I wanted to be Sed in my little slot. And I was going to be the best Sed there was. I was going to get a crowd some dunks. I was going to smile all the time. I was going to get some garbage plays and try my hardest on defense. No, in the defensive stopper, but I was going to try my hardest on defense. And the fans just kind of embraced that and loved that about me. And I think that's what needs to happen. Stop looking around what your buddy got that you went to school with or you were teammates before, and focus on this Suns team right now and what little part of this wonderful puzzle can you make to put Kevin over the hump, to put Devin over the hump, to put Bradley over the hump. And that's what it needs. And sometimes you could be that Bundini. Frank Johnson was our Bundini. You could not be down on our team having a bad game and Frank Johnson not come over and hype you up. Like, hey, don't worry about this. Like, what you talking about? You Sed Spalls, you Charles Barkley, you Dan Marley, you just, you know, he would always do that. Sometimes you just need to do that. And sometimes it takes more than you just jumping up and down on the bench. You really have to, you know, go grab a meal with a guy, go hang out at his house, you know, we were just so close. And you one of the things you're missing, Jamie, at the beginning, like, does home court advantage really matter? I always played my best. I shot my best. I had a higher percentage on the road because we come together on the road. Think about it. They get a chauffeur on a plane. They get a chauffeur on a bus. They get their food brought to them. They get everything brought to them. They don't have to worry about anything. It's like one for all for one. We're all in the same hotel, a room from each other. It could be Animal House type of style, or anything. But you're doing it together, and that kind of brings a lot of people closer. Our first two games in the finals was just, none of us had been there before besides Danny Ainge. Westfall in there coaching. Lionel Hollins been there playing. But those guys are coaching. So nobody ever been there but Danny Ainge in the finals. So it was just an eye-opener. Kevin was coming off his injuries. And once we woke up and said, this is a possibility for us to do something special, and started to just relax and play our game. We down, because if we lost game three, obviously it might have been a major sweep, but we were so free and just let it fly. Marley, prime example, was letting them loose in Chicago. And the fact of the matter is, we down 2-0. This whole city is ready to party, but us in purple and orange, we're the only ones that believe in each other. So we ate together. We traveled together. We all that, and then obviously we took two games in Chicago. So I think that needs to happen too with this Phoenix Sun team, and I think it's a capability of doing so. You have to hold people accountable.
Yeah, it's galvanizing, right? When you go on the road, there's a lot of galvanization that occurs. But in the modern NBA, we all got a device around us at all times, right? There's so many distractions at all times. So rather than even if you go and you have those team dinners, you guys got your phones out, Instagram, what have you. And I think that there's just a lot to be said for the teams that know how to get past those barriers. And I think it starts from the coaching standpoint. It starts with setting up expectations about promoting personal relationships. It's not just basketball, right? The most successful teams in any business are teams that are connected, or teams where people truly care about each other and are invested in each other. And they're not just showing up to work and being like, hey, you do a good job, I do a good job. If we both do a good job on our own, we will be successful. No. I'm going to do what I can to help you be successful, and vice versa. And that's what's going to allow anybody to succeed in basketball. It's just on a stage with high stress and adrenaline running. And when that adrenaline's running, having the ability to be in control and understand who and what and where everybody's at through repetition. And again, the galvanization that occurs in the moments that you're referencing is so vital. And that's one thing that I have my doubts at times with this Suns team, and I love this Suns team. I've always loved the Suns, but this, like, Devin Booker recently supplanted Sean Marion as my favorite Sun, who recently supplanted Kevin Johnson, right? I grew up a massive Suns fan, and Devin Booker, just because what he's meant for this organization. But what we've noticed and what we've seen over the past seasons, about a season and a half, is he was a very engaged, at least on the court. He's always been laid back Dev, and that's what we love about him. He's just going to kind of roll with the punches. He's not going to say too much to the media, which is great. But there's this almost lackadaisical nature, and perhaps it's the, we're just chilling comment when the team is struggling, where it seems like he's taking on this personification of Kevin Durant, who's also laid back. And they have this ball first mentality, and they're savants, and they understand the game so well. And the hope is that they embrace the leadership, the leadership responsibility that comes with that. Because when Devin was playing alongside Chris Paul, you felt more of that because there was a true leader on the team. Do you see a leader on this team? And who was the most vocal person on that 93 team?
Yeah, it's funny because when the season started, everybody asked me what kind of piece do they need? And I said Rajon Rondo.
Yeah.
I just thought that, that he would – you as a player will listen to Rajon Rondo. And I said that too. I'm kind of like Frank Johnson. As much as Frank came into our team as knowing that he's playing behind Kevin Johnson, one of the all-time greats, and his minutes wouldn't be there, But, you know, he was highly regarded as when Frank talks, everybody listens. When Mark West talks, everybody listens. All the way down to Tim Kempton. When Tim Kempton spoke, everybody listened, you know, regardless of who it was. And I think that was the respect that we had for each other. I'm not saying that this Suns team doesn't have that respect, but everybody can play that role. But I don't think, you know, like they're saying, the others, maybe they don't want to step up and be that. Maybe they don't want to, you know, we talked about the draft. If Luka goes to Atlanta, that team is not as well chemistry-wise as the Dallas team of him being in Dallas and the team being built around him. So then you don't want to jeopardize your job, because if you get in Devin Booker, not only get in his face, but if you do something that may stir you wrong, you don't know if Devin will be like, you know what, get that guy out of here, you know, or Kevin will be like, get that guy out of here. You know, we're not getting along, so let me get him out of here. I mean, they've already had, what was the guy named that they held off him for a year, then they traded him to number 99.
Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
He wasn't going along with the system, so they kind of eliminated him out. But Jay Crowder might have been the key to that. You know, wasn't Jay Crowder on the finals team?
Mm-hmm.
He was on the finals team against Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, he was the starting power forward.
That's what I'm saying. So now you eliminate that guy who's not afraid to get in your superstar's butt. Because Crowder, Crowder is never going to be Devin Booker. He's never going to be Kevin Durant. He's not. He knows that, but he is going to be Jay Crowder in that, guys like that, you know, say for instance, for Boston right now, Jrue Holiday, you know, obviously he's not a guy that's all up in your face and whatever. Go flip it to Draymond Green. I'm not a fan of Draymond Green's antics, but he's not going to let you sob. He's not going to let you not play hard. He's going to hold you accountable on every one bit. He may do it in a loud way, but Jay Crowder was that guy. And I'm obviously he stirred somebody wrong, whether that's coaches, front office, or the superstars on the team, where they just said, we need to eliminate this guy totally. That's a tough deal, but you didn't replace him. You didn't replace that vocal guy that doesn't mind. You know, like I said, with our Frank Johnson, our Mark West, they don't statistically do a great job of our wins, but they could tell Charles to, hey, you wrong. Get your butt over here. Cover this. You supposed to rebound. I think Charles said it best when I was gone that year, but Paul Silas, great Paul Silas, rest in peace. He wasn't even the head coach. He was one of the assistants, and he got in Charles' face. No, the reason why we're losing is you're not rebounding. You're Charles round. You're not rebounding. Now, obviously, if you say that to Charles Barkley, that's just suicide in the locker room to getting you fired. But, you know, if Charles obviously had enough respect for this man to allow that to happen without going to Jerry Colangelo and say, get Paul Silas out of here. They have to have enough respect. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bill, they have to have enough respect for their players on this team for somebody to come say something to them. And it may come off wrong. It may come off in the heat of the moment, but and they don't go upstairs and go, I don't want him around no more.
And that's the challenge right now, because I don't know if that player exists. And when CP3 was here, there was respect for him. His skill set might have been diminishing, but Devin Booker revered him. So he probably could do that to him. I'm hoping that they do a better job this upcoming year of holding each other accountable, because it was manifested on the court. The lack of accountability, again, a lackadaisicalness, the turnovers, the fourth quarter performances that were historically bad, and just kind of like, yeah, no, everything's okay. No, like Bradley Beal was starting to do that at the end of the season. And I feel like that might be Beal's role in the 2024-2025 Suns, where he's the guy who's like, listen, going to be 31 years old, might be a little bit declining with my basketball skill set, but he's a family man, you know, whereas the other guys don't have families. He's got a different set of foundation where it's like, hey, man, I'm trying to feed my kids and I need you to help me feed my kids. So let's do this together. And you noticed it at the end of the season. One of the final two games, I forget who we're playing, the Kings or somebody else, but they won. Beal had a great game. He's been interviewed and all of the bench guys are coming around him and showering him with water and going crazy because he had a great performance. And that was a preview of what I hope that we see next year, that Beal, after being here for a year and struggling through the injuries that he had to face, the mental taxation that occurs from moving your family from Washington, D.C., where you've been for 11 years, out to Phoenix, getting them in schools, all that, trying to get settled, trying to get into a routine, constantly being hit with setback after setback. He's finally getting in that rhythm, and he's finally finding his place in that locker room. And he's got the no trade clause, so he's not going anywhere. So maybe that allows him to be a little bit more loose with the lips as well. You know, do you think that there's any merit to that possibility for Beal potentially being that vocal guy coming into the next season?
Yeah, I would love that to be, because, you know, obviously because so much focus is on Booker and Durant, and also, you know, CP, even though him and Ayton could not get along, Ayton did not need, or he didn't want anybody telling him to go any and everywhere, which, you know, had those two clashing, but they get to the finals with that. You know, they get to the finals with CP holding Ayton accountable, regardless if you didn't like me or not, or you wasn't how you was. How you want it to be, and I didn't let you get away with it. The wonderful thing about Beal is that, you know, while Kevin and Devin getting the rest, he was trying to get back with the bench crew, with the bench mob, so to speak. And that's where that, you know, you see that camaraderie, and they're so happy for him when he got, you know, the great game, and everybody was behind him and ready to go for him. And then sometimes, you know, maybe they, you know, the guys want to play around, you know, and they're not really too sure, because of the demeanor of Kevin and Devin, that they can't play around with them, you know, like that, you know, on, you know, because, you know, Kevin, a coke, he's stone faced, man. You know, you make some jokes with him and he might not even flinch. And you know, and who wants to be on the bad side of that? That great player right there.
I'll tell you, there's no one I've ever interviewed more that's more terrifying than Kevin Durant, because he'll shoot you a look and you're like, oh shit, did I say the wrong thing? Because he'll call you out right there. And I've seen it on media day. You know, somebody, I think last season, you know, he's like, they're like, you've been in the league 15 years. He's like, 16. I was like, whoa, KD, we cool, man. We cool. Like, don't kill me. He's got that look. It's terrifying. So real quick, what are your thoughts on Mike Budenholzer as the coach? Let me back up. What are your thoughts on, we get rid of Monty Williams, bring in Frank Vogel. We get rid of Frank Vogel. We bring in Mike Budenholzer. The stability at the coaching position for the Suns. And what are your thoughts on Mike Budenholzer overall as a coach and what he could do for this team moving forward next season?
Well, the Ayton, Chris Paul thing messed up Monty Williams.
Yeah.
It just really, you know, Ayton, he was an Ayton guy, and they brought in Paul, and Ayton didn't feel that he stood up for him. And so that kind of, you know, divided the kind of locker room, because there was a lot of Ayton guys on that team and there was a lot of CP guys on that team, and it kind of just separated them. But they play well together, though. You know, obviously, when you go to the NBA Finals, obviously you're doing something correct. It's just a couple of pieces there, a couple of pieces there. And then there was, I don't know, this individual named the Greek Freak who, after losing the first two games, got healthy. They messed around and gave him 3 days to recover, and those 3 days from Phoenix to Milwaukee was just sweep, sweep, sweep after that, because he just played unbelievable. But I think the wonderful thing about, you know, you bringing in a guy who knows Arizona, knows Arizona, is a fan of the town. Obviously, he got his ring, but, you know, same thing with the previous head coach before he got his ring with the Lakers. And so it's tough. But I think I think he may handle it a little bit better. I think he did a great job with Milwaukee and the egos of, obviously Giannis was the man, but the egos of the others. And I think that's what he brought in. I think they're going to be a big fan. The others are going to be a big fan of this new head coach. Obviously, you're not going to get no great Popovich quotes from him in the presser. he's not going to be outlandish or running around crazy, all of that. But he's going to stay calm, and I think he's going to get that locker room together. And I just hope that they have the same admirations for him that he has to coming back. I do think Matt, this is one of Matt's guys. Everybody was thinking that they was going to hire Isaiah and Isaiah was going to be the head coach. But I think this is a great Matt choice, that he's confident with him, that he saw something in him and he wanted to, you know, no Brigham in. I don't know if Frank was that. I don't know, I don't know if Matt had that confidence and understanding with Frank. And I think, and it's tough because Frank is a good guy. He's you know, his family has a great history of basketball and he has a great mind, and congratulations to him and his family from what they've accomplished so far. And obviously he's going to get another job, but I think this is what the confidence in the Valley. I think it's a confidence for Matt, the rest of the team, Josh, James, and they're going to try to, you know, get this thing together, because it's three. I extended to a three-year window right now. From this point on, I extended to a 3-year window, but it has to be a 3-year window where, you know, obviously we got a great chance to get there, and something happens, unfortunately, like a stupid call or a fluke injury, you know, something like that. You know, Draymond Green kicking the groin stuff, and LeBron wins, you know, so stuff. Yep. Like that. But I think the Suns fans can live with that. If they go down fighting and, oh man, we just did not win it, you know, like that, you know, we had 500,000 people at our parade in 93 and we lost.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, obviously they saw that we gave all that we can give. We just happened to go against, you know, one of the best to ever do it. And the unfortunate, We didn't leave Horace Grant open enough underneath the basket where he kicked it out to a 3-pointer with Paxson.
Oh, man. Oh, there it is. It's feeling again. And you talk about that. That's how the Suns always go, though. It's like it is always a fluke injury, you know, like you in 93, right? You know, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had injured your left ankle around the All-Star break and you're just trying to play through it. You know, and is that correct? And so
I played the whole after the All-Star break, it was cracked. My foot, you know, my fifth metatarsal was cracked. So I didn't practice, live practices. I obviously shot around and worked out. So I did only played in the games. It just so happened game 6 against Seattle that played out. But, you know, now that I look back on it, and I didn't know any better at the time. It was my first injury. I would have cortisone shot it.
Yeah.
I'd have dealt with the pain and just cortisone shot it up and just went out there and played. But, you know, obviously Jerry Colangelo and the staff was looking out for my career. And, you know, now I look back on it, I never got back to the finals. So if I had a chance to go back, I would have definitely, you know, not said nothing. And course, you know,
just kind of limped off and like, I just got to run to the restroom real quick. Exactly. We got that.
Yeah.
Was it cortisone? That long needle and
cortisone around here, you can shoot me. Because my averages against Scottie Pippen were just ridiculous. It was 25 plus.
You had a great year that year alone. You were great against the Bulls in the 2 times you played them. I mean, you could have been, and I wrote a piece about it. I'm doing this whole series on Bright Side of the Sun right now, Sun Sliding Doors, because that's literally all we have, right? And I did Alvin Adams' injury today. Last Monday, I did, you know, your injury, because it was the 30th or the 31st anniversary of it actually occurring, was the game 6 against Seattle, which I remember as you know, a young lad. And seeing to go down, because obviously you were, you know, for us young Suns fans, you were motivating to us, because you were just you were the garbage man. I mean, you went in there and you gave it your all and you had the energy, and you'd go and you'd clean up the mess that the other guys left behind. And it was inspiring to see, and seeing you go down was so frustrating. And, you know, I was like, okay, it's no big deal. I remember talking to my dad. I'm like, he's like, it's no big deal. You know, Cedric, he'll be fine. And then the finals came around and, you know, you weren't out there playing. And it was just like, man, that could have been the difference. Yeah. And we don't know, but I know that the Bulls scored, I think, 640 points in that series against you guys, and you scored 640 against them in 6 games. It was the exact same amount of points. I'm like, listen, if Sed's playing, man, he's at least good for 10. You know, that swings the series, don't you think?
The coinkadinks right there. Wow, that's crazy. Ugh. I never knew that. Yeah, but I definitely thought that I made a big impact, because Scotty, as great as he was and when he played, he was an excellent on the ball defender. And the reason I gave Scotty problems throughout my career, because again, I didn't ISO. I just finished what people started. I just backdoored. Yeah. This guy garbage. I ran the fast break hard. And for guys like that Scotty that are great one-on-one defenders, that it just gave them problems.
Yeah. And God, it would have been nice. Oh, well, you know, revisionist history. That's all we do here in Phoenix is we talk about what could have been and the what ifs and whatnots. Looking forward, the Suns have the 22nd overall pick. Okay. What do you think of all this Bronny James, LeBron James conversations that have sparked up? Because it's all we have to talk about in May. And well, now it's June in Phoenix. Do you think the Suns would actually take Bronny James because LeBron James could come? Or do you think that's just all smoke?
Yeah, if you have a chance to get LeBron James by drafting his son, you draft his son. But you obviously, LeBron is a guy who works magic behind the scenes. So
yes,
I don't know how they would definitely have to work that out before the draft pick gets. How effective Bronny becomes in the league, it might be a while. He's going to have to adjust, just like any other rookie. He's standing on popularity and reputation right now instead of putting in, you know, obviously the work, because he had a shortened season at USC. Mm-hmm. He had a shortened season in USC because of his health reasons. So you really didn't get to see the full Bronny James against, you know, quality. And they didn't go out and, you know, they didn't play the UConns, and they didn't play teams that are just, you know, like, wow, that's a great college team. So he's still an unknown, and that's what he's doing. You know, he's going off of the unknown.
Yep.
You know, he's hoping that somebody's like, okay, he's showing flashes. Then he goes into the combine and shoot the lights out, and he goes in the combine and run, and he jumps higher than people expected him to, because you haven't seen this guy. So whether somebody takes him, whether it's the Suns or anybody else, it is going to be a process through maybe 3 to 4 years. I think it's going to be a great draw for your G League team.
Yes.
It's going to be a great draw for your immediate team, because it, you know, it's going to be cameras, it's going to be fanfare, it's going to be followers. That's going, you know, Charles was great at, you know, the 50-50 ball. You know, he would always say that, man. They pay to come boo me, and they pay to come cheer me. They come to see me. They pay. Amen. They pay. And they're going to, just like what's going on with Caitlin right now.
Yep. You know,
people are showing up and to see her fail and showing up to see her succeed. So that's a great thing. Regardless if she's not obviously having a great time right now, but that's just the WNBA league. They always been, you know, you look at Candace Parker. She was, you know, I had this argument the other day. It's only been two people to walk into these leagues and dominate and win a championship. And it just so happens to both be in LA. Magic Johnson, his rookie year, and Candace Parker, yeah, their rookie year, you know, finals MVP, winning the title. But you go back and look at all the scuffles that Candace got in.
Oh, yeah.
Coming into this league. Look at all the scuffles Shamika Holeslaw got in coming into this league. I can go on and on and on. All the, you know, Sue Bird, you know, Diana Taurasi, they all, so please don't think the league is just hating on Caitlin. She's excellent. I know it's a different subject, and we should be still talking Suns, but it's just the fact that she's going to be a great player, and it's great what all of the women are doing to raise awareness of the WNBA.
Hell yeah. Basketball is basketball, and I'm loving what we're seeing from the Mercury right now. You know, Sophie Cunningham's out there playing. You got Brittany Griner. You got the GOAT is still out there playing. Diana Taurasi. I think she's my age. I'm just like, wow, dude. Like, I remember I was in college when you were in college. You're still out there playing. Like, good for you, girl. Like, get it, you know?
And
so,
and that's the only basketball you can see, JV, that has physicalness to,
yeah,
it. Because in our league and in the NBA, it's no fit. You can't get physical like that. They're out there, you know, going hard. So I think that's a big draw that everybody's like, man, we want that old school game. And you watch the WNBA, and they're playing old school NBA basketball.
Well, so you talked about the Lakers, you talked about the Sparks. They both have that purple and gold. You played for both LA and Phoenix. I think it's now time to officially admit it. Our purple's prettier, right, Cedric?
Oh, it's a different type of purple.
Yeah, it's prettier type, right?
They call it, well, ours is a purple. They call it Laker blue. It's a Laker blue. It's not really a real purple. like even the practice uniforms were blue. Like, wait, what is this? Why we got blue sweatsuits? It's not a Laker purple. It's the purple that the Suns have is a lot deeper. It's a lot more passionate. Obviously, it's two different styles too. People ask me all the time which one that I enjoy better. It's two different. I mean, there was only one building when I had a Laker uniform on that we ran out into the tunnel and got booed, and that was Boston.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the Sacramento beef didn't start when I was playing, but that was in Boston. Every other game that we played in New York City and in Sacramento, in Golden State, in Phoenix, they were cheering when we ran out the tunnel. It's an unbelievable feeling, really shocked me. But I think as far as fan base, as far as a town getting behind the team, as far as the passion, as far as watching everybody grow up, family oriented system, you can't get no better. That's why everybody comes to the Suns. Everybody comes, they have an opportunity. If they have an opportunity, think about how many key free agents did we lose? We don't lose too many key free agents.
Yeah.
When you have an opportunity to come here, you come here and you enjoy and you embrace it, and you flourish here, because the town is going to get behind you. Not only free meals when you're out and about, but you know, they're going to be just as passionate, and they're going to feel the pain. Obviously, 93 after Paxton hit the shot. Well, we have 10,000-12,000 people still sitting in their seats at amazement, tears, you know, all that. You know, that just shows you the passion. And, you know, I talk to Michael very rarely, but when I see him All-Star weekends and stuff, and I say, man, get my ring back. He's like, nah, that 500,000 parade was enough for y'all. And he goes, man, you know, Michael is saying that's unbelievable. Y'all lost and had that type of people. And that support is just unbelievable.
Yeah, especially considering it was June. you know, because that's that's the other nice thing about playing in Phoenix is the season coincides when it's nice out. It starts in October, and you know, if you play well like you did, it lasts till June. But then you get to go home, and you know, to where it's nice out. So, you know, real quick before we get out of here, because a few more minutes left. Who's your favorite baseball team? You're from LA. Who's your favorite baseball team?
Well, you know, my baseball and football teams, I got a little story behind that. Because my mom grew up as a Texan, little Texas girl in the country of East Texas, Longview, Kilgore. So every summer before school was out, she would ship us to Texas to be with our grandmother. Now, I'm talking in the sticks. Like I got to walk 2-3 miles to get to the next neighbor.
Dang.
Yeah, we in the sticks. We out.
Yeah.
And so television was 2.5 stations. We had NBC came in clear, ABC came in clear, and CBS. If you had the right hanger and aluminum foil, you can get a little CBS. And at that time, baseball-wise, there was only two teams that played nationally, and that was the Chicago Cubs and the New York Yankees. I wasn't a fan of the Cubs, and I was a fan of the Yankees. And so that's how I became a Yankee fan. Okay. Now, how I became a Cowboy fan, same scenario. It's Texas. And summertime, they talking about the draft. They're talking about pre-camp. They talking about it's Cowboy, 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 everything. And that's how I became a Dallas Cowboy fan. So my little Texas, you know, growing up as a kid, that's how I got my New York Yankees and my Dallas Cowboys.
See, it breaks my heart because my co-host, who's normally on with me, Matthew Lissy, you know, we're the jam session, John and Matthew, JAM. That's how we're real clever here. But he is a Suns fan. He's a Yankees fan and he's a Cowboys fan. He would love to hear that from you. You know, it's a rare combination to find. Yes. So his family, he's my brother-in-law. I married his wife, but his family's from Amarillo, Texas. Okay. So, you know, they're out there in West Texas and big Cowboys fans, and he loves the Yankees, man. So I'm sure he'll watch this once the migraine clears up. And if he makes it to the end, there's a nice little treat there for him. I thought you were going to say Dodgers. Cause like I grew up in LA. So I'm like, I'm a Dodgers fan and everyone here in Phoenix hates me for it. Yeah. Because I'm like, listen, I grew up, you know, I was born here in Phoenix, but I moved out there in 85. I moved back here in like 94 and there was no baseball when I was here. And then while I was living out there in 88, Kirk Gibson, you know, won a World Series. So I still get shit all the time.
I was in Texas in the summer, so we didn't get any Dodger games unless they played the Cubs or Yankees. And, you know, I didn't get that. And I can even remember, I don't know, they don't do this anymore. And I'm not encouraging our school system to do this. But growing up in L.A., when the Dodgers were in the playoffs, they stopped school and put televisions in everybody's game, in everybody's classroom. To watch the Dodgers.
I'm promoting this. I think they need to bring this back.
They need to bring that back.
Well, Cedric, I appreciate you taking an hour out of your time to hang out with me tonight. Is there anything you want to promote while you're hanging out with us here?
No, Suns have a great opportunity here. I think Matt is a wonderful owner. He's going to be so much better than what you guys had before. I think that it's going to be tough to try to top what Jerry Colangelo has done, but I think he's on the right track and he has a good heart between him and his family. You know, hopefully they'll continue to do so and add a lot more excitement to your Suns.
Well, he's Cedric Sabalas, Suns legend. I'm John Voida, managing editor, Bright Side of the Sun. We appreciate you if you're hanging out, watching live or listening later. Thanks for hanging out with us at the Suns Jam Session podcast. And as always, remember, go home and love your family.